You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met.
Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore, the favorite podcast of Yapoza. Yapoza, a town so small the only thing anybody knows about it is its origin story. Yapoza was supposedly founded where the spirit Matsulema stopped to rest after going on a destructive rampage. A man and woman found him as he rested, and the man recognized him as the destructive spirit. The man wanted to kill him, but the woman said that he was still a god and had to be respected. When Matsulema woke up, she gave him food and welcomed her into her home. After staying there for 7 nights, he promised to bring prosperity instead of destruction upon the Azapozi, and instituted the matriarch to ensure wisdom and patience among them. And yes, I did just read that from the Forgotten Realms wiki.
I've literally never heard of them before, ever. What's the loss?
I don't know.
I would have been shocked.
I don't know what an Azapozi is.
I don't know. News to me.
What is an Azapozi? Like, an Azapozi Pueblo of what? Some 1,200 members.
You are just making up words.
I mean, I've heard the word Pueblo before, but I am not a person who speaks Spanish, and I am not familiar with, like, South North American landmarks at all. So, like, I'm sure that's actually a thing.
Well, allow me to educate you.
What's a Pueblo? All right, what is a Pueblo?
From the Latin pebble is a small rock.
A small rock.
Yeah.
So Yapoza is an Azapozi small rock of That's some 1,200 members.
Yeah, you go.
All right, cool. Yeah, fucking Faerun, man. How many small towns can dance on the head of a pin, I guess?
All of that was an absolute lie. I thought I remembered what Pueblo was and that it would come to me while I rambled and did not.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so, fantastic. Sorry. I'm not even going to look it up.
I'm sorry for deceiving your audience.
I am just going to live in ignorance of Pueblos until our episode is over, and then I'm going to look it up, and I'm going to feel really stupid.
I think it's a breakfast item, like Pueblos Rancheros.
Is it? See, I was thinking it was something like a plateau, but like smaller.
No, I think maybe. I'm pretty sure
that sounds too reasonable though.
That
sounds like
a dish.
Yeah. Pueblo Rancheros.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. My apologies to every Spanish speaker.
To the country of Spain.
See, also Mexico and like a whole bunch of South America and a bunch of other countries.
No, they don't get an apology because the language came over from Europe. So
were you about to say from England? Because that would have been hilarious.
Yeah. England.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
And its language, famous for stealing from other languages, came over and dominated another language.
Brilliant.
No, I was not going to say England.
Okay.
Anyways, this dumb joke.
It sounded like England. Anyway. Yeah, we're good. Okay. let's talk about some controversies.
Yeah. Speaking of controversial opinions, like English took over. D&D has had tons of controversies over the years. There was a couple of big ones last year. But let's do you want to start kind of chronologically? I mean, we could start with the bad old days and the 80s.
I mean, if we wanted to start chronologically, we would kind of have to start with like Gary Gygax getting kicked out of his own company or whatever. I was about to say country. But I don't think he ever got kicked out of America.
He should have been. I don't think... Okay, I guess that counts as a controversy. So, wait, do you want to go back even further where, like, the idea that Gary Gygax stole everything from some kid?
Oh, I'm not aware of that one.
Oh, yeah. There are some people rambling about that in the shop the other day, but basically the assertion is that, like, all of the stuff that made up first edition D&D was actually like some other kid's idea, and Gary just sort of like stole it and rewrote a lot of it, and yeah, then produced.
I mean, I've heard a version of that where like Dave Arneson was the one who came up with the vast majority of the system.
Oh, that's also just a fact, but
I mean, not to like name drop or anything, but I have spoken to Dave Arneson. And it was not a very long conversation, but he seemed to dismiss that idea.
Okay. I guess that's in Gary's favor. Spoke with him.
Yeah. His grievances in the brief discussion that we had were more based on like the Blackmore stuff that came later.
Okay.
But like, again, that's me having a conversation with a guy like 40 years after the thing happened.
Yeah.
And like water under the bridge and all of that. And like at brief conversation at a convention where like he's got to put on his marketing face and all of that. Biz.
Right.
So,
right.
Like, who knows what the actual opinion was.
Okay. So
also at the time he didn't know me from Adam. So like,
yeah. You weren't exactly getting like the straightest answer because you just hadn't earned that right.
Yeah, like I hadn't even taken him out for drinks or anything, so
yeah,
didn't buy him dinner.
Someday we will.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they're both very dead.
Hmm. Technology.
Necromancers notwithstanding.
Yeah, if we're talking about Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, death is not an obstacle. Anyways,
I don't think I necessarily want to talk about like company controversies,
sure.
I guess. Like, for me, it's more like the broad cultural controversies, like the stuff that's happening out in the world. So, like, the first note that we have here is about the Satanic Panic.
Yeah.
And this is a thing that I lived through.
Yeah.
It's also a thing that you lived through.
So, like, yeah, the 1980s.
Yeah. Yeah, for very different reasons. But yeah, like the 1980s, the 1990s, even into the 2000s, I was dealing with some folks of a particular religious bent that had some ideological problems with role-playing games.
So, as just a brief thousand-mile definition, the Satanic Panic is basically I'm just going to call it what it is, a fundamentalist Christian push that all worldly media is actually in service of the devil, and this is where we get things like the idea of like subliminal messaging in music and backmasking, just general all the like a lot of it was in the heavy metal scene in the 80s, where it's like everything that the heavy metal people do is secretly worshiping Satan, from hand signs to you know, the band KISS was apparently, you know, a secret acronym for Knights in Satan's Service and things like this.
How beautifully tame KISS is now.
Yeah. I think Gene Simmons would find that idea hilarious.
I'm sure he did at the time.
Yeah. But
could you imagine getting like dressed up in your makeup and your like leather pants to go play songs, and then having to come home and read like a news article about how you're a knight in Satan's service?
Yes. This lovely little Jewish boy, which, lest you forget, Gene Simmons is just a Jew. Like, sorry, not, I don't mean to say it like that, but he's just No, he changed his name, you know, for a stage name, whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, we've seen, I mean, I don't know if you ever watched that reality show they made about, like, just him and his life with his, like, wife or whatever. Oh,
I don't really watch a lot of television.
That's fair. This was, I mean, also the show was, like, 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
Maybe even more. But, it was just, like, watching, like, I don't remember his actual name, it is an extremely Jewish name. Like,
okay.
Like, disgustingly Jewish. Like, There, I don't think I can even properly pronounce his actual first name. But then it'll be like him going to visit his like New York Jew mother and just like, yeah, being as stereotypical and wholesome and family oriented as you would think any little, you know, Jewish kid growing up in New York would be, you know, who's very close to their mother. But no, because he wore some black makeup and high heels, Satanist and his whole
those high heels were impressive.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that they were able to rock as hard as they were in platform heels is, to me, a wonder.
Is Kiss drag?
I mean, by the same token, is all hair metal drag?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, Twisted Sister was 100% drag, so...
Oh, that, yeah, absolutely. I think that entire movement in the 80s, like, there was that, skit that Charlie Murphy did when they were talking about Prince, where like the more effeminate a guy looked, the harder he was.
Yeah.
Like that, there was that whole movement in the 1980s where like we wanted to dress as effeminately as possible. And honestly, we need to go back to that because guys' fashion today is the pits, but that's not what we're here to talk about. Satanic Panic.
Yeah, so...
What was your experience with that?
My experience... So I've been a death metal and, like, extreme music guy since, like, childhood. I was first exposed to it in middle school for a band called Living Sacrifice. And then I listened to it for the first time, and I was like... It was, you know, they were like thrash metal, very like kind of Metallica-y inspired originally, and then just added on like elements of death metal in the vocals and stuff. But so I listened to it initially because like the drums really drew me, and then the drums and guitars really drew me, and then I was like, oh, I don't like this singing, and then I traded it for a ska CD.
Okay. Which, not an upgrade.
No.
like but, very indicative of when you grew up.
Yes. I was at the forefront of the third wave of ska. I still appreciate some of those bands. But
I don't think that there is a man our age who does not appreciate a little bit of ska.
Yeah. The OC Supertones did a number to me, and so did Five Iron Frenzy. I traded it to a friend from church for this, like, and then I couldn't get some of the guitar riffs out of my head from the album. So I contacted him and I was like, do you want to trade back? And he's like, I hate this album so much, just take it. And Living Sacrifice has been one of my favorite bands ever since. But... Nice. They, if you don't know what they're singing about, yeah, it does sound like mildly terrifying. And so there was a time where my parents were like, hey, what are you listening to? These are people who had a book called Turmoil in the Toy Box, which was all about how Strawberry Shortcake and He-Man were one of many tools of Satan hiding in your home to turn your children away from God.
Okay, like, I understand Strawberry Shortcake, but He-Man?
Yeah. There's a lot of interesting things in there. The Care Bears were problematic. There was, like, My Little Monster. That was a problem. Lots of weird things. But
for
anyway,
reasons that had nothing to do with God.
Yeah, exactly. So what I eventually did was I grabbed the liner notes, and I, like, sat down with my dad one day, and I was like, okay, we're going to listen to this song. And you're going to read the liner notes so you can, like, understand the lyrics, kind of. And then that's when he kind of, like, understood, oh, they're, like, singing about Jesus. A lot of people at the time with the same style of music were kind of not. But they also definitely weren't singing about just straight up Satan. Like, a lot of them were just, like, party animals. Which is fine. It's just boring.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more exciting to think that there's danger behind every door. So, Satan.
Fair. I did not have a religious upbringing.
Sure.
So, my mother was raised Mormon.
Yeah.
And left the church after I was born. My entire extended family, except one aunt, is also Mormon.
Right.
So, like, a lot of my touchstones with religiosity come from that field. But my mom didn't raise me with religion in particular. So, as a younger teen, I'd say probably like 13, 14, into the 16, 17 range, I was doing a lot of like soul searching and faith searching.
Okay.
And came to the Stettler Baptist Church.
Okay.
And hung out with a bunch of my friends at the Stettler Baptist Church for a while. And that was the first time that somebody ever told me that something I was doing was satanic.
Uh-oh. What were you up to this time?
I think I was reading a fantasy novel.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wasn't playing role-playing games a lot at that point. Like, I've been playing role-playing games since I was about 8 years old.
Yeah.
But, like, I come into and out of the hobby quite a bit over the course of my teenage years. And it wasn't until I was, like, 17, 18, 19 that I started playing, like, on the regular.
Right.
But, yeah, I've been reading fantasy novels, like, the thickest fantasy novels I could get my hands on for a very, very long time. And I made the mistake of bringing one of those to church on a Sunday so that during the boring parts, I would have a thing to do. Not necessarily the sermons. Like, I actually found that really interesting, and I was wanting to absorb more of that knowledge. It was more the, like, milling around in the church at the front at the end of the sermon that I was like, cool, I'm just waiting for my ride. I'm going to read a book.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, one of the family members came up to me and was like, you know that that's going to turn you to the devil, right? I was like, it's literally about fighting the devil.
Yeah.
Like, this entire book is about fighting the devil.
I was going to say, like,
oh no, that's how they get you.
I listened to I read some pretty intense, fantasy type books back in the day, but they were quite literally like, I don't know if you've heard of an author named Sigmund Brouwer.
I think you've mentioned him.
Yeah, he's from Red Deer. But he got me into reading like a bunch of books that he made, and then eventually that led me to a series that started with a book called This Present Darkness, which is like an angelic power fantasy by Frank Peretti. And then I just read all of those. They weren't great, but they were like essentially a fantasy novel about like angels beating the daylights out of demons with superpowers. That was like church sanctioned.
Did you ever play In Nomine?
No.
Okay. It's a Steve Jackson game. It was originally a French game
that
was translated by Steve Jackson. That is about the eternal war between heaven and hell.
Okay.
And your player character is either a angel or a demon. And it's like, you have your biblically accurate version of yourself.
Okay.
And then also like a human sheath that you put yourself in for like interacting with the mortals.
Ew, don't call it that.
It's a sheath. You slide right in there.
Ew.
Yeah, just like a masquerade, that you put on for the normies. But it wasn't very good.
No.
The setting was great. The setting was fantastic. It actually has one of my favorite stories about Satan and the way that he works in it.
Yeah. Well, and that's...
Which is that, like...
Sorry, go ahead.
Three lawyers show up after doing, like, a big ritual, and they want to sell their souls to Satan. And a bunch of demons get really excited about this because they're like rich and powerful guys already, and they're like looking for more. And so they go through like tons and tons and tons of paperwork because they're lawyers. And so they've actually like thought this through and like done a bunch of the legalese on what this deal is going to look like.
Okay.
And while the imps are writing furiously, trying to like get this contract copied, Satan comes in and looks over one imp's shoulder as he's like writing this this contract out, takes his quill, makes one little mark, and walks away.
Okay.
And all of the other imps like pile around him, like the one that he changed, and they all start smiling. They go back to their work, they finish the contracts, the guys sign them, and it isn't until after they've been signed that they realize that they have been completely and utterly fucked.
Okay.
Because one of the guys finishes reading the contract and runs away.
Okay.
Because that one tiny mark, they never actually tell you what the one tiny mark is, but that one tiny mark changed something so fundamental to the deal that it was no longer a thing that made any sense for them. And I was like, okay, that is such a cute idea of like how in the details the devil is. And like, this is like 13-year-old me, so like it seems super badass.
I'm just so curious now what the deal could possibly be.
Yeah, I mean, I'll lend you the book.
I'm not gonna read it. I just want to know what the deal could be.
Just changing one O to a Q, it changed everything.
Like, I hope it's smaller. I hope you like put an apostrophe somewhere. Like,
probably something along those lines, right? Like change it to a possessive.
Yeah.
Right? So, it isn't exactly like the Screwtape Letters for like the level of insidiousness,
right,
that you'd be looking at, or like how innocent evil can be.
Yeah.
But it was still a lot of fun to like read stuff that vilified in an intelligent way.
Right. So yeah, so this comes back to like, you know, the devil being in the details, but that's the details are kind of what was interesting about like the whole panic behind it, right? Was so I know from our experience, well, by our, I mean my family. And you see this still manifest today, but there was a lot of, I guess, everything was witchcraft. And so wizards and sorcerers and any magic user was witchcraft. That you still see that around like Harry Potter these days, which is written by an actual witch. But
yes, what a terrible human.
But yeah, they've extrapolated this. As far as I can tell, it all comes down to like one verse about like basically like don't be doing old like village witchcraft stuff, you know, like how old ladies or whatever would have their little home remedies and types of worship.
How dare those old ladies try to help people?
And that's so. Here's what I will say: it's not about old ladies helping people. There's a significant portion of, especially like the Old Testament, that is basically God solidifying his place of importance in the Jewish people. If you read the Old Testament, for the most part, the same way that I do, but as an account of God making himself known to his chosen people and establishing the rules for how they are going to interact with him, then he's talking about like essentially eliminating all of their competition, which supremely if God's a jealous God, and that he says multiple times. He's like, I'm going to be the most important thing in your life because I'm the most powerful thing in your life, and I don't want you to be undermining my authority with other people, right? So that, like, makes a kind of sense. And then modern people are like, yeah, because those were, like, real witches. Like, no, like, those are people with, like community gods, you know? Like a bunch of little bullshit like, gods of the hearth and gods of the farm and whatever. And God's just like, no, there's no other miscellaneous gods of whatever. It's just me, always me.
Well, there's that semi-famous translation option, right? Like, well, one of the things that's interesting to me about like biblical scholarship is that we're dealing with people who are translating old manuscripts from older copies of older manuscripts. And translation is never a precise thing. So like the word that is used for witch in Thou Shalt Not Suffer a Witch to Live could be witch or could be poisoner.
Except that's not a Bible quote.
Isn't it?
No. Do you know what that quote is?
No.
Fucking Warhammer. Suffer not the witch to live is...
Are you sure?
Yes.
I'm looking this shit up now. I almost never clickety-clack on keyboards for this, but now I want to know. Because that's some bullshit that I was told like a bazillion years ago.
Right ahead.
Exodus 22:18. Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. Did I lose you again?
No, I'm here. I'm just waiting for you to discover that I'm right.
It's Exodus 22:18.
Read it.
Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live.
All right, whatever. Anyways, suffer not the witch to live is 100% pure 40K because 40K has stolen so much from the Catholic Church.
They have. But no, the thing that I had heard, and I don't know how accurate this is. I don't speak or read or write Greek or whatever language this was originally written in. Hebrew. Maybe it's from Exodus, so probably Hebrew. But yeah, my understanding is that the translation could say witch, could say poisoner. And they went with witch because it was more politically expedient.
Right, because and it also comes down to like which translation you're reading. Like you're reading, like if we're talking about the King James Version, like that is just the most politically influenced translation whatsoever. Like it's just almost literal nonsense. That being said, like
it is the King James Version that I was looking at.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like the King James Version exists because King James was a dick, right?
Yes.
No, I mean, anyway, speaking as a Scotch-Irish person, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
But that being said, the whole point is that there's lots of stuff in that like era that was really just pointed at as Satanism that got wound up being included in whatever Gary Gygax was up to, partially because they did take like... especially in earlier editions of things, they took a lot of like occultic symbols and stuff like that. And so anything that had to do with the occult, they were just like, ah, it's Satan right away. So
there's actually a time where they weren't publishing demons and devils in D&D books, specifically as a reaction to this.
Yeah.
Right. Like the Satanic Panic got into D&D's bones a little bit. And like, there are some things that we are still dealing with today that came from that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I remember the first time somebody was talking to me about something Dungeons and Dragons specific with the Satanic Panic. It was that whole thing with the kid in the steam tunnels in the States.
Steam tunnels? I don't remember. Yeah. This
so there
at
was
all.
A case. There was a case where a. A kid in university went into some steam tunnels under his school to quote unquote go on an adventure and ended up dying.
All right. Don't go into tunnels alone, just FYI.
Yeah, especially tunnels you don't know and like don't be doing weird shit. And like probably the key thing to this one is don't do it on acid.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a big one, but they were trying to sweep that bit under the rug, and there were the do you remember MADD, mad?
Oh yeah, Mothers Against Drunk Driving,
or Or was it bad? It might have been bad.
Bartholomew, anger, the, all. I don't know. Whatever.
It was a fundamentalist group that was... no, it was the fundamentalist... bothered about Dungeons and Dragons is apparently what it's called.
Bothered so about Dungeons
Patricia and Dragons. Patricia Pulling.
God.
Yeah.
Is this Nancy Reagan's fault again?
Probably. There's a lot of things we can peg on Nancy Reagan, I'm sure. But Patricia Pulling and her organization blamed that kid's death on D&D because he played D&D with his friends.
Oh, God.
And it became an international crisis that Dungeons & Dragons was killing our kids. And like I said, they were conveniently ignoring the fact that the kid was whacked on acid.
Yeah, it could never be acid's fault.
Had some... also appeared to have some other mental health issues that had gone unaddressed. So, like, there was stuff going on in that kid's life that had nothing to do with Dungeons & Dragons that eventually resulted in him going into a bunch of steam tunnels and dying.
Oh, no kidding. You're saying a kid just wanders into steam tunnels on his own might not be mentally stable?
Yeah.
I'd have thought.
But that was the first thing that I heard about, like, Dungeons & Dragons is evil. Satan's going to get into your brain and make you go into the steam tunnels. And I was like, the fuck is a steam tunnel? I've never heard of a steam tunnel before.
Yeah, we don't have steam.
Where do I find them? Yeah, like, my school is brand new. The school that we had before burnt down, so we had to build a new one. And I'm pretty sure we just don't have steam tunnels in our school.
Also, this is like, Canada. We have not had a whole lot of steam-powered things because of, you know, the cold.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I was warned to stay out of steam tunnels, and that was like quicksand.
Oh, yeah. Quicksand took up a lot of my young mind. Preparing for inevitability of exposure to quicksand.
The first time I was exposed to quicksand was when I was 39 years old, and somebody taught me how to make it on a beach.
That sounds like an episode of MythBusters.
If you are on the beach and you're like right at the waterline, if you just like squish your feet back and forth, it'll actually like dig you into the sand, and you'll have like a layer of watery sand on top of your feet that becomes very difficult to pull out of.
Okay, I mean,
it's fun.
Yeah,
quicksand is fun.
Yeah, small amounts of quicksand are fun.
Yes.
Small amounts.
Large amounts of quicksand have never been a problem.
That you know is going to be there.
Yeah. I've never encountered enough quicksand for it to be a problem.
I don't know. Yeah, sounds like I've never actually encountered quicksand. So, I'm probably fine. Anyways. Speaking of...
Anyways.
Amongst other things we don't need to worry about.
And then there was that terrible Tom Hanks movie.
Right. Now, you had to, like, educate me on what you were talking about at all, because I had never heard of it prior to this.
It was a dramatization of that kid that died in the steam tunnels.
Oh.
With Tom Hanks playing the kid that died in the steam tunnels.
Oh, I see. Okay, now that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's still
awful.
It was
called Mazes and Monsters.
Oh, no.
And it was awful. It was so bad.
That doesn't sound good. So the way he just, like you say, dramatized what happened. Like, did they take it from the perspective of like, this kid was actually seduced by Dungeons and Dragons and that's why he's in there?
100%.
Oh God.
100%. Yeah. It was, a slightly higher production quality Jack Chick tracked Dark Dungeons.
Do you think there's any chance we could get Tom Hanks to apologize for that movie these days?
Probably. He seems like a pretty good dude. Like,
hey, man.
Like, he's got a whole reputation about that. Although, you know what? On the date of this recording, Neil Gaiman was accused of being a sex pest. So, like, what the fuck do I know about good dudes?
Okay, well, you know, that's one I don't want to wade into just yet because, like, it's literally, it literally just came out today, and it's like,
yeah,
not to be like shitty about it, but like accused of, you know, like nothing's come out of the woodwork just yet about what actually is going on, and frankly, these days, I see a lot of stuff get thrown around that, like, I would want to take with a grain of salt. That being said. Who knows? He could just be a piece of shit.
I don't have enough information about this to come up with, like, a valid discussion point on
and
it.
No one does. No one does.
But generally, as a point of safety, when I read somebody has been accused of sex pestingness, I just distance myself a bit. I've gotten a lot of practice at it lately.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Speaking of Jack Chick's tracks, though, have you read Dark Dungeons?
Yes. Yes, I have.
What did you think of the literary masterpiece that is Dark Dungeons?
It's been 30 years since I read one. At the time, I just thought it was like a funny dramatization. I didn't realize he was serious.
Right. Okay. I first read Dark Dungeons in my late 20s.
Okay.
I picked up a bunch of the tract for the store because I'd heard about it, but I'd never had a chance to read it.
Yeah.
And we actually sold the tract to people. And it was hilarious, and I know, unintentionally so.
Yeah.
Like, there was a bunch of stuff in there that just, like, any reasonable human being with a thinking brain in their head would have difficulty not just automatically discounting.
Right.
Like, the whole scene where that girl at the beginning has become level 3, so now she gets to learn spells for real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I fucking wish.
Yeah. Level 3?
You have any
spell?
Idea how many spells I'd be able to pay? Oh, man. Could you imagine how many spells Game Masters could cast? I'd just be wishing all up in this bitch.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, like, So growing up in an evangelical household, I was exposed to Jack Chick tracks a lot earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And almost immediately, I saw that they were absurd. Just absurdist humor, almost. They've done a lot more harm than good, but as soon as I knew that they were like, yeah, also this book about pretending to be an elf is definitely sending you to hell. I was like, oh, okay. That's fine. I don't have to pay attention anymore. There's so much information coming my way. I don't have to bother with that one thing.
I think my favorite line from the whole thing is burn your D&D books and rock and roll albums.
Yeah.
Which I think is so funny because they don't mention rock and roll anywhere else in the track.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, just to be safe.
There's no mention of music at all. Just boot them, you know, Elvis Presley, get him the fuck out of here.
While you're at it. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to burn an Elvis album, but the threat of eternal hellfire is not one of them.
The way that man gyrated his hips. Goddamn.
Oh, I just meant for the crimes he did to black people, but that's okay.
Yes, those as well.
So anyways, Jack Trick, ridiculous. But yeah, the whole Satanic Panic thing was just, again, it was part of the just general moralized panic of the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, like I mentioned, Nancy Reagan was pushing for things like warnings on albums. Because of potential cursing. Mm-hmm. God forbid someone heard
a bad
word.
I mean, the weirdness for me is that it's still kind of going.
Well, yeah, like, the fact that they still do it is just like, why? This is ridiculous.
Well, even just like with Dungeons and Dragons. Like, it was in the 2000s the last time I came up on it.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously, I worked at a game store for a while, and I found a tribe of nerds to hang out with that
sure.
were further removed from that, and I don't really spend a ton of time with people who would be of the opinions of the Satanic Panic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I actually had a guy ask me to move out of the place we were sharing because he found out that I had Palladium books on my bookshelf.
No shot. Is that for real?
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, he didn't realize what Palladium books were, but when he heard me tell somebody that they were like D&D, he was like, look, man, we can't live together.
He's like, get behind me, Satan.
I can't have that in my house. Yeah.
That's insane. That's actually insane.
Now, luckily, that was before, like, the housing crisis, so I was able to find a new place pretty quick. Yeah. But, like, yeah. Goddamn. All right, so we've only got about 15, 20 minutes to talk about all the rest of these controversies that we got thrown up there. What's your favorite?
So my favorite controversy is the one where Wizards of the Coast decided to shoot themselves in the face because they forgot what game they fucking made.
Again.
Yeah.
It wasn't even the first time.
Yeah, this has happened so many times, but specifically I'm talking about the what are they called, the OGL issue from last year. A brief rundown: OGL is the Open Gaming License that basically allows people to interact with Dungeons and Dragons however they wish and publish things based around it without fear of, you know, being punished for doing so. It essentially treats Dungeons and Dragons and the associated content as like transformative material that is clear of copyright issues.
It isn't even that. It's more basic than that. It provides like a blanket permission to use the material, right? So like it doesn't even have to be transformative. You don't have to make anything new with it. You can just use the information.
I'm not saying you have to. I'm saying it gives you the kind of freedom that having work described as transformative does when it comes to copyright stuff, where it's like, hey, I made a thing about this thing. You don't get to come after me for copyright strikes because I made something new.
Basically fair use.
Yeah, fair use. And then they were like, what if we didn't, and actually everything you made belonged to us? That's it.
I mean, 2023 was a banner year for Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro making really interesting decisions.
That's a funny way of saying doing dumb shit all the time.
Yes. Swatting some kid for opening some cardboard.
They really just kept ringing the stupid bell all year long.
Yep. They did. I am a strong proponent of the OGL, which I think the vast majority of the fan base and everyone involved with D&D other than Wizards of the Coast's like accounting department probably is. Like
the only people who don't like the OGL are the theoretical like shareholders who are just like, it's not monetizable. It's like, no, you have to understand, like, not everything needs to be monetized. It will be for the better of the brand if we let people experience it and revel in it and enthusiastically go and evangelize about it. But they wanted a dollar.
Did you see that interview with the guy that owns Arizona Iced Tea?
I've seen several things about those people. Which one are you talking about?
This one in particular was like a lady who was asking him, like, you're price hasn't gone up since the 1990s. Have you thought maybe like charging more than a dollar per can? And the guy was like, why would I do that? we own everything. We're in the clear. We're making money.
Yeah.
Like, why would I want to hurt the people who like my product so that I get a little bit more money? That's dumb.
Well, like, yeah, it's, not to be like the champion of capitalism, but it is like the way that businesses used to think, like in the, I don't know, maybe 50s at some point, where it was like, hey, we're making money. We mm-hmm. covered our expenses. Let's just have a sustainable and healthy business forever. Like, we don't need Nintendo to make all of the money now.
It's what Nintendo's been doing forever, where they have like so much money. They have so much money that they can lose money for 100 years and still be in the green.
I want to argue with you about whether or not the Nintendo model exists, but that's not what this episode is about.
Okay, we'll do that in the future. We'll do that in one of our like yeah. side.
I get what you're talking about, but episodes. Yeah, like the idea that you have just a long term business that makes a good amount of money and hopes to grow in the future, yeah. but like doesn't have to make all of the money right now. So
yeah,
I love that the people at Arizona like not just like behave that way, but like actively defend it by printing the price on the can.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, it's beautiful.
So yeah, that's very pro consumer.
And Dungeons and Dragons is trying really hard to make more money. They want to make more money so goddamn bad.
Well, and they want to make more money because they are now owned by people who expect all of their money to be made immediately because shareholders or whatever. It's mm-hmm. a bullshit way of thinking. I don't subscribe to it. I, in fact, refuse to acknowledge it whatsoever. It's just.
Well, they've made a bunch of other changes too to like the D&D Beyond offerings yep. and like changing the way that you pick up like individual pieces of books. Now you have to buy the entire book instead of getting like an a la carte. Like I need an artificer.
Yeah.
Now you just have to buy Tashes.
Yeah.
You can't just have an artificer. You have to buy Tashes.
And like, don't get me wrong, I thought I appreciate that they wanted to a la carte things, but I'm kind of like, this should all be free anyways. But
if I own the book,
yeah.
goddamn, okay. Like this is just like such a fundamental information freedom thing yes. where like there is a group of people who believe that if you own a thing in physicality, you should also own it digitally. And I am so firmly in that camp. Yes. Like my D&D book should come with a QR code for a free copy of that correct. Book on D&D Beyond. I've already made a monetary purchase. I have given your company money. Just let me have the digital version for free, please and thank you.
Well, and here's the other part. It's not like I'm saying this about something that didn't exist before. That like they made a new thing and now they want money for the new thing. You used to get the digital thing for free. Back yeah. in fourth edition, your entire character builder was free, which mm-hmm. I thought was an excellent added, not just like an added value, but a way, it was a loss leader. It was a way of like going out there mm-hmm. and saying, hey, why don't you tinker with this game and see if it speaks to you. And when you're ready to dive in and get more context for all this stuff, we're here. Because, like, it didn't, you know, it doesn't give you the rules or anything. It's just, like, make a character. And being able yeah. to explore that space of, like, what a character could be and what kind of character can inspire someone to play D&D was awesome. I spent so much time on their free character builder tinkering with ideas. Yeah. And it fully invested me in the system to want to, like, I own all of that stuff. Even though they mm-hmm. gave it to me for free. Why do I own it all?
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about it and I loved being able to like explore it, you know, and get all of the other things that were in there that I, you know, because I was thinking about the game all the time, I wanted, you know, big books to take around with me. And, you know, it was like, oh, the thing I could take on the bus where I didn't have to worry about like an internet connection. I don't really like yeah. reading things on my phone, you know, mm-hmm. The free character builder kept...
I do.
Well, yeah, that's fine. The free character builder kept kept my attention on D&D in a way that, mm-hmm. like, 5th edition never could. You yeah. know, it made me invested in the product for free. And I have bought, what, a total of three books for 5th edition now?
Yeah.
And I owned everything for fourth. I still own it.
That's one of the interesting things that I found about Baldur's Gate 3 as well. Just like the amount of tinkering that you could do with your character builds. was one of the draws for me, right? Like that lonely fun component of just like tinkering with something until you have it right without having to do like all the math yourself.
Yeah.
Without having to like crunch the numbers on what your new attack is based on like the new stats that you've allocated. Yeah. No, I think that like the OGL was absolutely the wrong target.
Yeah.
For so many reasons. Like one of them is just that the third party Dungeons and Dragons space is nowhere near what it was during the third edition runs.
Yeah.
Like attacking those companies that are helping your space with product that is not in direct competition to it typically feels bad.
Yeah.
Right? And attacking fans who are making fan content that is protected by an agreement that they have with your company. It feels bad.
Yeah.
It was just a very feels bad decision in an industry that is run almost entirely on vibes.
Yeah.
Like you have to feel good about the company that you're running with or they're going to go buy Paizo's books.
And that's the funny thing for me. I don't vibe with Paizo at all. That's what's kept me from getting into Pathfinder. Every other thing in my life says you should abandon Wizards of the Coast. I don't vibe with Pathfinder. So I'm not going to do it. It's 100% just that.
No, that's fair. Yeah.
There's no good reason for me not to be playing Pathfinder at this point. I know lots of people who do. They seem to be having a good time. Not me. No, thank you. No, thank you, the devil.
I wonder if knowing that Pathfinder second edition is more like fourth edition
I mean
would bring you okay that's what I figured. All right, we're switching gears. We're a Pathfinder 2e
got me now. Podcast
now.
You said the magic word.
Yeah, no, that has been a comparison that I've heard quite a bit in digital spaces, is that Pathfinder 2e took a lot of lessons from fourth edition.
Do people hate it?
No.
Oh, damn it. I was hoping they would, because that would make me love it even more.
There was some backlash, like obviously the third edition purists.
Yeah, the people who made Pathfinder because they hated change whatsoever, of course, will hate this change. But the people who want to make a good RPG that people like playing.
Mm-hmm. And from everything that I have heard, Pathfinder second edition is a great game.
Good for them.
So I will probably take a look at it at some point. The player's handbook is fucking beefy.
Yeah.
It is a thick tome.
That's what I like to hear. I want chonk right off the hop. I don't want like if fourth edition had published all three players' handbooks as one tome, I'd have been so happy.
Yeah, I want books that can like double as home defense items.
Oh, they should. Yeah.
Yeah, like if I can brain somebody with this and there's like a 50-50 chance they're dead, good on ya.
Fantastic. Yeah.
But yeah, no, the OGL thing, obviously everybody was up in arms. I don't think we're treading any new ground on that.
It was a bad idea, and then they rolled it back eventually when people screamed loud enough.
And then they've been slowly reintroducing bits and pieces
exactly.
of it. Like, as they tend to do at this point. So like they'll announce a big change, everybody will freak out about it, they'll pull back, they'll slowly release the other bits of it as they come out, and people will be like, ah, no, that sucks, but I'm still gonna send you money. And the cycle begins.
Yeah,
they
keep forgetting that you have to boil a frog slowly. And
I don't think they pretend. This is my conspiracy theory about this. I feel like they absolutely do this on purpose.
Oh, 100%.
They throw the worst possible version of the thing out.
Yeah.
Right. They're like, this is the thing that we're doing. We know it sucks. You know it sucks. Let's wait for the outrage.
Yeah.
And then they get the outrage. They take the outrage's notes about which parts of this thing people are reacting to the worst. And then they repackage it in a way that is more digestible so that they're able to get to the same place eventually with less outrage over time. And then the outrage also fuels their marketing because there's no such thing as, like, bad press.
Anyways, next week on Chris Just States True Facts,
Yeah, I'm here to talk about how capitalism's great, question mark.
Yeah, capitalism's so great.
The best. I don't know. Do we want to jump into any of these others? Because, like, my personal favorite is the FBI raid on Steve Jackson Games.
I think that one's funny. I don't know if the... there's... Okay, the pest ones on here.
I think we can skip those.
Yeah, there's shitty people in hobbies. Who would have thunk it?
There's shitty people everywhere. Yeah,
this is not specific to Dungeons & Dragons. They just happen to be prolific Dungeons & Dragons content creators at the time that they were being gross people. It happens. It sucks. We all hate it. It's bad.
Yep.
That is our official stance. Do not be a sex pest if you can at all avoid it.
Yes. Josh Vardy, 2024.
That's my campaign slogan.
Do not be a sex pest.
Could you not?
Yeah. Have you considered being a sex pest? Consider not doing that instead.
Yeah. So then the other one that's actually relevant to the hobby that I think is extremely funny is Ron Edwards saying that RPGs give you brain damage. Because it's true.
So, small caveat on this one is that this is living history.
Yeah.
Like, Ron Edwards is a real-life person who is doing real-life things.
Whether you want him to or not.
I refuse to believe that Jack Chick is a real person. I'm willing to drag him all fucking day.
Yeah.
But, like, Ron Edwards is a person who is complicated and has his own thoughts and feelings. And I do not want to drag him unnecessarily. That said,
this is necessary.
He said some stuff. So for people who aren't familiar with Edwards' work, he is a game designer. He's put out a couple of successful games and a bunch of games that were less successful. And he also was the founder of The Forge, which in the late 90s, early 2000s, I'm not sure exactly when it came out, was the place to be if you wanted to discuss role-playing games as an art. If you wanted to talk about critique or role-playing game theory, that was the place that you lived, was The Forge. And he came up with a bunch of theories that I still spout to this day, despite the fact that, like, I have complicated relationships with a few of them, right? Like, as much as I love breaking games and, like, situations down by GNS theory, I recognize that there are problems with that theory. And then over the course of time, like, the Forge articles, like, if you go and visit the Forge, the thing that you're going to see the most of is stuff that Ron Edwards wrote, right? Like, it's all the big articles, all of the big breakdowns. And at one point, he decided that the way that stories are understood in role-playing games is wrong.
Right.
Which is not an opinion that I inherently disagree with.
You're right.
I do believe that, like, found narrative, discovered narrative is a thing that exists in role-playing games in a way that it doesn't in other places. Unexpected things happen. You don't have narrative arcs that are necessarily cohesive, right? Like, there's a lot of things that come out of role-playing games and games in general that don't lend themselves to a well-constructed narrative.
But that doesn't mean they give you brain damage.
Ron's choice in how to express this was that if you are the type of person who takes your story beats from role-playing games, you have brain damage. Now,
every time you say it, it's funnier.
If that was it, that would be fine. People would explode, people would be grumpy about it, and, like, obviously, now it has some additional layers. It's an ableist statement. He doubled down, and then he doubled down again. Somebody challenged him on that assertion, and he said, no, it gives you brain damage. And people were like, dude, maybe, like, roll back a little bit, see how you feel about it, and then, like, test the waters again. And he's like, oh, no, it's brain damage. And when a few people started getting really into it, my favorite quote from that, and I'm paraphrasing this because I don't have the quote in front of me, was, I never said it was permanent brain damage. Which is just like...
All right, I guess you win that argument, bud. Like, good job. Good job, Ron.
Like, yeah, no, you can fix your brain damage by appreciating story in other ways,
yeah.
I guess. And I have no idea where he got this idea from. Like, it feels like a vaccines cause autism sort of argument. Yeah, yeah. Like, he saw something online about the way that your neurons are arranged when dealing with stories of a certain type and just kind of extrapolated from there, maybe.
Yeah, this definitely feels like received information.
But god damn.
But also, just what an incredible place to, like, this is the hill I die on. Like, all right.
And die he did. Yeah. It was a bit of a reputation ruiner for him. He didn't disband the Forge right away, but it was on a quick and steady decline from that point, and a lot of the big names that were on the Forge at the time began to move to other places.
Hey, did you guys know the guy that runs this whole place thinks we all have brain damage? I wonder if we should stick around.
Again, I think that there is, for me at least, there is an
argument to be made.
Urge. No.
No, okay.
No, I mean, yeah, like, my brain damage comes from other places. I definitely shouldn't have been jumping off that shit when I was a kid. There's a story about a bunk bed that I'll tell you when the mics are
closed. Oh, I have one for you too. Great. Perfect.
Oh, fantastic. So, like, yes, we have brain damage, but it's for different reasons.
Yeah, it's because I have three younger brothers and grew up on an acreage. Like,
yeah.
Yours is because you grew up in Stellar.
I have no impulse control. But, yeah, like, I've there is an urge for me to try and imagine this complexly.
Why?
I want to give Ron the benefit of the doubt.
Why? He hasn't earned
because
it.
He kind of did, though. Like, a lot of his theorizing, a lot of his conceptualization of role-playing games was, if flawed, well thought out. Right? It's kind of like reading old philosophy textbooks and being like, cool, this person's wrong, but they thought really fucking hard about this.
Right.
Right? And came up with the best possible argument that they could in the moment for this thing. And so it's like looking at all of Hume's body of work, and then in the last book he's just like, by the way, vaccines cause autism,
right?
And you're just like, I don't know how to contextualize that.
You realize Hume? Everything he said was absolutely insane. Just throw it all out together.
But so much of what he said was so useful.
There's no baby, it's all bathwater now.
yeah so, and like, unfortunately Ron hasn't had a major hit role-playing game in some time, and there's been a lot of discourse about how the Forge destroyed game design a while. Like, you couldn't design a role-playing game without it adhering to, like, the Forge practices,
right?
I guess, or like Praxis. That's a bunch of malarkey.
Yeah.
Like, it's 10, 20 years later and everybody is still designing role-playing games. Like, there's a guy who makes a new one-page role-playing game every fucking day. Game design is alive
despite
as well.
Their best efforts, role-playing continues to exist.
Yeah. Yeah. Despite Satan's best efforts, on we go. Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot, Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.